Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready? Let's go!
Now, from the IMLD home studios, in its ninth season, you are listening to, In Much Less Detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Your football party is live with your hosts, Jay and Dre. Good evening. Welcome in. Our football party is abbreviated tonight because we had our recap, or what little bit of recap we could have, since I didn't really watch much football last weekend. But we already had a recap show Wednesday night. So tonight is the old school abbreviated hour-long version of our podcast, where we just give you our picks, and that's all we give you. You get the recap last Wednesday, like I said. You are listening indeed live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast. We are here with you on a Saturday night, September the 25th, 2021. I'm Dre, he's Jay, and I was taken aback because the phone line is already lighting up. Someone was waiting for our show to start because they have something to say immediately, and that kind of actually scares the hell out of me, to be frank. But before we get to him, what brief recap that we might have about the Thursday night game that Carolina won over Houston, 24-9 as 8-point favorites. And we both liked the Panthers. So we both start off our week on the right foot. And that's always a good thing, but it's a little sweeter of a good thing for me, because if you follow me on Twitter, you know that I locked up the Panthers. My lock of the week is already taken care of. I don't have to worry about it. 3-for-3 in locks to start the year. So despite being under 5 for the season, I'm feeling really good.
You should, and you'll probably still find a way to have 6 lock wins for the year.
Probably.
But that game was hard to watch, and it got out of hand late. But, yeah, I don't know what we were expecting from General Mills all the Mills jokes. You know, you almost made fun of him too much because he did lead that one drive. I guess he's good for one drive a game.
I just play the two-minute warning the entire game, and
yeah,
I guess he's
one
good.
Drive. They got that one drive, and it wasn't pretty. The yard discrepancies in that game, you know, 300 yards for Ghost Boy, who's looking pretty good on a different team.
Yeah, can't really complain much through 3.
So I'm curious to hear what our caller wants.
Okay, you asked for that. Yeah. All right, area code 973 is calling in. Please state your name, where you're from, and what's on your mind.
Thank you, gentlemen. This is Lou from New Jersey. First time caller to this show, but no stranger to Blog Talk Radio at all.
Hey, Lou, you call so many shows that you forget. You called us before. We remember you because you were wondering if Giannis Antetokounmpo was elite or not before the NBA Finals game. And
guys. I thought it was different guys because it was a different show. So my apologies. Nice to hear from you again.
That's all right.
Same show, different name. That was the off-season version of our show. So I guess the follow-up question would be, is Giannis elite?
Okay, yes.
Okay.
Doesn't have to like it, though. Yeah.
We got the confirmation. We've been waiting for 2 months, 3 months for you to give the confirmation. We finally got it, so we're happy.
Yeah. Yeah, you drag it out of this. Yeah. But now that we're into the week 3 of the NFL season and you're discussing quarterbacks, well, I can say one thing. Some of these quarterbacks that came out of the draft we were expecting a lot from, so far have been a bust. And for my guy, Zach Wilson, he's been a bust.
Oof.
I mean, yeah, okay, he had a good first game, you know, and everybody thought, you know, riding high on him. But as of the second game with 4 interceptions, no. I mean, look. So what does Sammy Boy do for his new team? Oh, he said the 07 career game of his life. Of course. He does. He comes with the Jets. He does horrible. He goes to Carolina. He does wonderful. Tell me that wasn't all set up, really.
It's two games.
On Wednesday night, I think it was in the after show, we talked a little bit about this. Because we didn't make the pick, but we talked a little bit about the game. We made the pick on Twitter on Thursday, but the actual point I was making about Darnold was Darnold the problem, or is it the team and the organization and the coaching staff and the personnel?
Well,
because, you know, you get him into a different situation, he sure looks like a different guy. Now, this doesn't happen very often. I don't know if even Dre can – I was thinking about bringing this up to Dre on the show today. Can you think of a first-round draft bust quarterback who in 4 years, 3 years, goes to another franchise and actually looks halfway decent? Because the answer is I can't think of any.
Yeah, and I've heard them too, but, you know, the top overall draft pick, Trevor Lawrence, oh boy, he had a horrible game. He's off to a horrible start too.
Well, you got to remember, these top draft pick quarterbacks are top draft picks because their teams suck.
Yeah, but you expect more from them to make the team better, and obviously so far it hasn't happened.
Not yet.
Again, it's early. It's only two games.
Abbreviated preseason. Don't forget that. And, these are bad teams. These are teams that are the cupboard's pretty bare. And, was it Peyton Manning or Troy Aikman? I believe both won one game their first seasons.
Peyton.
I think Troy Aikman had a
won, like,
first
three.
Season, too.
Yeah.
That's true, too, yeah. That was the 1-15 season, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sure after 2 weeks of, you know, the Colts looking terrible, people were calling in, this Peyton Manning guy, he's a bum.
He sucks.
Especially, we're from Chicago. So we know all about people calling sports talk shows, complaining about quarterbacks, because Chicago is like the capital of that.
I thought you were going to say about the Cubs, but okay.
I've wondered if other cities are like that. I don't listen to sports
we're
talk around
too.
The country.
Oh,
really?
New York is worse.
Okay.
Oh, New York is worse, guys. New York is a lot worse.
I figured it was kind of bad everywhere because it feels, you know, the little bit of snippet of sports talk you hear, it's usually, you know, Philadelphia, New York, Boston. Mm. Oh my God, the guy is terrible.
The
we
New
need
York
to fire
is
him.
Brutal. right now the New York media is you know, hounding on the Jets and Giants. I mean, they experienced so much better, especially the Jets. They were looking, you know, to get better with Zach. But so far, Zach has been more of a hack. Oof.
Yeah, that was.
They can call him Hack Wilson.
They might.
Oh,
that's in
very good.
Tomorrow. They might. Call him Hack Wilson.
Hey, that'd be a Hall of Famer. But looking at the roster of the Jets, though, how are they supposed to get better? Like right now with Zach Wilson, who's he surrounded by?
That's the problem.
Who's he throwing to?
Yeah, he's still in the wrong direction. That's the problem.
Yeah, but if he threw in the right direction, like who's out there? There's just all these guys, you know, and even Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville, even though he's throwing the wrong direction too. But get it straightened out, the lack of talent around them is a big problem, and we're going to see that tomorrow with Justin Fields making his debut for Chicago. The expectations of that are kind of high, but who's he throwing to? How's that going to go? Because I don't know if there's too many weapons for him to look. He might look as bad as Zach Wilson tomorrow.
My brother's a Bears fan, too.
And don't forget, too, Belichick was probably through looks at Zach Wilson that he had no idea what he was seeing out there. And that's what Belichick does to rookie quarterbacks. He gives them a rude welcoming to the NFL. And
Belichick
wants
everybody to be perfect.
Yeah. Hey, Zach Wilson completed 6 out of the 7 balls he threw in the first half. It's just, you know, 4 of them went the wrong way.
But they were completed.
Yeah. Like I said, he throws a catchable ball.
Clearly.
It's not the direction we want it to.
Boy, howdy.
All I can say, Lou, is it's two games very early. I know there's a lot of bad tape out there already on these kids, but the arrow can only go up because you can't play much worse. So, you know, you got to let them break themselves in and get used to the speed of the game. It looks like they don't.
With 0-2, though, you know, that's a bad sign. I know we get an extra game this year, but you don't really want to start 0-2 because you got ground to make up. You don't want to fall too behind, you know, behind so early because it's all we have to catch up when we're only playing 17 games. It's not like in baseball or basketball or whatnot where you can have an early slump and then make up for it later. In football, you can't do that.
I got bad news for you. You're going to face Von Miller, Bradley Chubb.
I know.
And, probably be 0-3.
I was afraid of that.
Let's do what I do. Have a drink.
Throw this year away. Don't worry about it. It's his first year. This is his developmental year. He's got to get the speed of the league and get caught up. So things can only get better is all I will say.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. But, you know, still, off to an ugly start. That's something that, you know, that the Jets don't want, the Jets fans don't want, because we were expecting a lot better. Well, I was.
Yeah, I don't know how many of them were.
I think we have found the root of the problem.
Yeah.
That is expectations.
Yeah.
Right.
Lou, you're always fun, man. I'll say that.
Yeah, but you know who wants to aim low? You're supposed to aim high.
That's true.
Yeah, I get it.
That's true.
Now, that's not a story.
But look at the bright side. There's 18 games now. That means there's plenty of chances to go 3-15.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks a lot.
3-15. That's aiming high. You didn't say 0-17. That would be a record. That would be a new record.
Well, that would be bad. No,
that'd be hard. That'd be hard.
They'll pull a few out. They'll pull a couple out this year. It'll be, you know, as long as they can keep some of these guys upright, let Wilson get his reps. He's not going to have to face the Patriots defense and the Broncos defense every week. He'll get a couple of, you know, he'll get a couple of games in there. They're playing a, you know, last place schedule, so you know, there'll be somebody in there that they'll sneak one in on two or three.
Yeah.
And then when they get that high draft pick, they won't need the quarterback next year. They'll go get them either like a good offensive lineman, or they'll get them a weapon, a game changer on defense. You know, no shame. It's not going to be a 1-year turnaround.
No, certainly not.
No, I guess not. But still, you know, you don't want to see, you know, like 2-15 or 0-6 or 0-15-2. Ugh.
Just hang in there. Just have some patience. That's all I can say. It's definitely not going to happen this year.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. But I did expect better.
All right, Lou, we're going to let you go. You're always a passionate New York fan and up there in Jersey.
Thank you.
We appreciate you.
Yeah, I'll have this more on my show next week as well. Oh, boy.
All right. The always passionate Lou in Jersey. Yeah, he's. I don't know if they are exactly the same in New York, but I had a feeling it's pretty bad elsewhere. I know Chicago's bad. Obviously, we've been listening to Chicago our whole lives, but if they're anything like Lou in New York, that's pretty bad. Like, I don't know how any Jets fan could really have a lot of expectation for this year. The team is terrible. It's just. I can't tell. I can't put it any plainer than that. This is a bad team.
Yeah, they showed some heart in week one. You know, they had a couple of garbage time touchdowns, and then last week they got their doors blown off by the Patriots, and you know they had Zach Wilson. You know, you even said the people in the media were already asking him if he was like the new Ghost Boy,
which is so typical New York media. That's just come on. The kids played two games, and you're already asking.
And now he gets Denver.
Right.
I see dead people.
So
we'll get to that pick. We'll get to all the rest of the picks. 15 more games to pick in week three in our abbreviated football party. We'll get to that after I find where I see. I'm having the same problem you had trying to find out where I put the plug section, and I got to go down all the way down to P. That's the problem. We'll pick all the games for week three, all the remaining games in a couple of minutes. You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Not on the radio, but only here on the website, blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. To be notified when we're live, you can follow the show on the Blog Talk Radio website, or you can follow my Twitter feed at IMLDDre when I tweet out when we're live before every show. Jason is on Twitter too. His feed is at IMLDJTG. Our show is available as a podcast where you get the live show and a special VIP after show. To listen to the show as a podcast, about an hour or so after the live show is over, come back to the show page and look through our archives, or subscribe on iTunes or any number of different podcasting apps, including Player.fm, Mixcloud, Blueberry, and the TuneIn Radio app. You'll get the whole show, the live show and the after show, downloaded straight to you. You can always send us a question or comment or shout out via email to the following email address, inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can follow all of our picks on our blog. The website for the blog is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. Our Thursday night picks will be available Thursday afternoon on our Twitter feeds. Again, that's at IMLDDre and at IMLDJTG. This copyrighted broadcast is a production of Jay and Me and is solely performed for our entertainment, as well as for any poor soul who happens to be listening. It is intended to be a football pick show for the private, non-commercial use of our audience. Any publication, reproduction, retransmission, or any other use of the descriptions and accounts of this podcast without the express written consent of Jay or me is strictly prohibited. All right, nothing feels better for me than to sit back and just let fly with the picks, not having to worry about the lock. Pressure is on Jay to figure out which of these games will be the lock. I've already taken care of my end of that.
I've got that. I've got that handled. Don't worry.
All right. Well,
I haven't gotten one right yet.
All right. You got to get off the schneid.
Fortunately, we'll no matter how bad somebody loses in the locks, the penalty is always the same. You can lose by one or lose by 14. The penalty is the same.
This is true.
So we'll and all I can, I'm going to go to sleep tonight. Glad to know that Giannis is elite.
The confirmation. We've been waiting so long. Mm-hmm. Finally, Lou admits. Somebody from New York admitted that somebody is elite that's not in New York. That we just made news tonight, man. I don't think that's ever happened in the history of New York that someone in New York has actually admitted that someone else is elite that's not playing in the state of New York. So we're
fortunately
glad to...
it happened on this show, which means nobody will ever know. So his secret's safe with us.
You know, 6-7 people, maybe. But, hey, they can spread the word.
6 or 7 people just fell out of their chairs. Or drove off
to
the side of the
road. To Burkina Faso, as always. All right, we will start with the aforementioned Bears-Browns game with the debut of Justin Fields as a starter. He got some game action, of course, trying to mix and match him and get some plays in and get his feet wet. Now, because Andy Dalton is no longer available, it's going to be all Justin Fields all the time tomorrow for Chicago. They are 1-1. The Cleveland Browns are also 1-1. And Baker Mayfield and the Browns give 7 and a hook, -7.5 hosting the Bears.
Yeah, I was going to say the hook scares me a little bit on this one here, but I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to have the Brown fever this week. You know, I really wanted to take the Bears here. It's Justin Fields, it's his first start. You know, get all excited for the rookie he can do. You know, like I said, he can do some really amazing things, but he can also do some really silly rookie things, like throwing the ball right to people, linebackers standing right in front of him. I have a feeling Cleveland's going to be coming at him from all kinds of different angles. That's a good defense, so they can get pressure on the quarterback. They're not terrible on the back end. They don't really allow much on the ground. The Bears' offense, I don't think Justin Fields is the problem. I think you know what the problem is. Problem's the coaching staff, and most notably, yeah, Matt Nagy, 30th in total yards, 31st in passing. They can run a little bit, But Justin Fields has actually been some of the contribution to that too. Plus, David Montgomery had that one really good game back in week one. But overall, that Bears offense just lacks sizzle, lacks creativity. And I'm not sure if just the change of quarterback to somebody more athletic is suddenly going to open up the playbook and this offense is going to stop looking like, you know, hot garbage. So I wanted to take him. The hook scares me, but I'm going to go ahead and take Cleveland here. I think Cleveland gets a, you know, 10-12 point win.
I precede my analysis of the game by reminding everybody I'm a huge Bears fan. I'm not rational. Take everything I say with a grain of salt. Okay, here we go. I warned you. Here we go. Jarvis Landry, the favored receiver of Baker Mayfield, lands on injured reserve with a knee, and OBJ is now ready to take his place. Finally, Odell Beckham will take the field for the Cleveland Browns after recovering from his ACL tear. He did not play the first two games, and he's finally ready to go right out there and take Jarvis Landry's place and be the number one receiver for the Cleveland Browns, which is bad news for the Cleveland Browns because, as we've talked about many times, as Jason first pointed out, and I didn't want to believe it because it's just counterintuitive, that the Browns seem to be much worse when Odell Beckham is on the field than when he's not, and the numbers back it up. So I don't know exactly why. We have our theories, but OBJ will be out there to ruin whatever Browns plans that they had. Chasing Justin Fields all around the field may backfire on the Browns because Justin Fields brings that athletic element that the Bears have never had at quarterback, at least not in a decent quarterback. And Justin Fields might not do much in the air, but he might make a whole lot of big plays with his feet. And the Bears on the other side can get after Baker Mayfield. So, yeah, go Bears. I got them to win the game and, of course, cover the 7.5 because why not? And, again, I'm not rational.
Bye, Bears.
I was wondering when that would start to come out, you know. I thought you held it together for the first two weeks of picks there pretty well. And you had the Bengals.
I mean, he wasn't,
you picked the Bengals,
wasn't playing.
Didn't you?
I tried to get extra cute. I said the Bears would win by one.
Less than two.
And they won by three. And if,
okay,
they were, and if I'd have got them at the 3.5 point favorite, I'd have been correct on that. So, you know, if that. But that was, you know, Red Rifle. So, of course, I could really temper myself. Now, let's go. Woo! Soldier Field. Soldier Field. Quarterback is today. All right, moving on from that to the Atlanta Falcons and the New York Giants. What a downer that is going from that game to this one. Both teams are 0-2. Atlanta, cop-out line, +3 at the Giants. Going to be a lot of threes and sevens this week.
Right? Yeah, I noticed that when I was even going through and making the picks. But yeah, this one had snuck down into that 2.5 to 3 range, but I picked it at 3. I'm still going to go ahead and take the Giants here. One of these teams I still had slated for the playoffs. The other one I didn't. And with Atlanta, we talk about Atlanta and all these offensive weapons waiting for the offense. It has not been there. Maybe the Giants' defense is going to, you know, be what it takes. But Atlanta going outside, I always have bad visions of this Atlanta team just going to New York and just bogging down and doing absolutely nothing. I remember a game where they scored 2 points at the Giants in a playoff game.
Yeah, after you're really going in the way back machine.
That was the Mike Smith era, but it never looks pretty when the Falcons go and play the Giants. I'm going to take the Giants to cover the 3.
Tight end Evan Engram should debut finally for the Giants. He had missed the first two games this season. I don't like Matty Ice so far under Arthur Smith. It looks like from the little limited bit of Falcons football that I've gotten a chance to watch in highlights that Smith is sort of treating him a little bit like Ryan Tannehill, like trying to rely on other parts of the offense and not letting Matty Ice just kind of sling it. He wants to kind of build the offense up. This ain't Tannehill, bro. Let Matty Ice sling the ball. Let him go and let him do what he knows how to do. I just don't like the Giants less. I like the Falcons not much, but I like the Giants even less from what they've been doing, the way they've been playing, and the way Danny Dimes has been looking. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in it, but I'm gonna go with Atlanta. The Giants just don't look good at all to me right now. And I think the Falcons can sneak in and get that first win of the year for themselves. On to the Saints and the Patriots. New Orleans and New England are both 1-1 and really disparate 1-1 teams. Both of them had victories where they looked really good, and both of them had losses where they looked really bad. So really hard to tell on both of these teams. And as a result, cop-out line, which makes sense. New Orleans +3 at New England.
I got when I looked at this line, I'm thinking, well, this feels like a value pick for me, and it feels like a value on the side of the Saints. The Saints came out and looked so good and so balanced, and everything was clicking for them, and they blew out a good team, a good team who was underprepared or completely unprepared. And then they went to Carolina and ran into that defense and just ran into a buzzsaw riding high off of that win. I think Sean Payton's a good coach. I think this is a more talented team than the other team. I think the Saints are definitely the better squad on the field. So I'm going to go ahead and take the Saints to spring the upset. I did the quotes there for you. Spring the upset at New England. I think this line has more to do with last week's results and a reaction to them, you know. Belichick and the Patriots, they looked really good and got all those interceptions, but they beat the Jets. The Saints lost to a team that's now sitting at 3-0 and a pretty impressive 3-0. So I'm going to still take the Saints on this one.
Marshawn Lattimore, the DB, is supposed to return from injury. Got a lot of call-ups and promotions from the practice squad going on this week. Kenny Stills, there's a throwback name blast in the past, gets called up for the Saints for their wide receiver core. Give famous Jameis a little bit of help. How about the two most tenured coaches in the league going at each other? Sean Payton and Bill Belichick, been around longer than anybody else. So, you know, these old heads are going to get at it. It should be fun. Of course, which Jameis do we get is the big question. Nobody knows for sure. I've expressed my fear already that it might be back and forth all year between good Jameis and bad Jameis. Might be good Saints, bad Saints all year. Can New England generate the pass rush to force Jameis into being bad Jameis and to force him into those mistakes? They sure did it against the rookie Zach Wilson. Or will Dennis Allen on the other side dial it up for the Saints defense and get after Mac Jones? That's the part that people don't pay attention to. The Saints defense has been a big part of their success over the last several years. So I'm going to concur with you because of the defense. I actually got the Saints to win a somewhat low scoring game because I think they'll force Mac Jones into the mistakes and Jameis will overcome and get the Saints on the board. On to Arizona and Jacksonville. Cardinals are 2-0, Jags are 0-2. Both are going completely opposite directions already this early in the season. Cards are big 7.5-point favorites on the road at the Jaguars.
Yeah, that was a big lucky win for the Cardinals last week. They let the Vikings basically just throw their ball all over the place, up and down the field. But they get, hey, you know what? Vikings are going to Viking kicker. I don't understand how snake bit you can be as a franchise to have that many things go wrong for you on the kicking side of the ball. The Jags don't do anything well, but I don't think Arizona is as good as some of their numbers may indicate so far. I'm actually going to take the Jags to keep it under the 7.5. I love the hook on this one. I could see Trevor Lawrence giving and taking away all day long. He's going to be forced into throwing situations, and I think this turns into kind of a shootout type of game. I could definitely see this being like a 34-27 type game for the Cardinals, which would make them 3-0. But I would also not be surprised if they just go on the road and completely lay an egg and lose this game. This is what fun bad teams, as they need to ascend. Like maybe in the karma comes back after that win that they shouldn't have had last week and says, no, Arizona, you don't deserve to be 3-0.
And also to be afraid of Nuke Hopkins, who has bad ribs and hasn't practiced all week. So there's a good chance that he doesn't take the field. Game time decision, although he's one of those veterans that might let him go out there and play, even though he hasn't practiced all week. But usually you don't practice, you don't play. But we'll see how that works out. So there's some fear there. There's fear of the Cardinals being the type of team that lets teams hang around, don't know how to put them away yet because they're, you know, still young. So I understand all that. I'm not even considering taking the Jaguars until the game doesn't look way too fast for Trevor Lawrence. Because right now the game looks way too fast for Trevor Lawrence, and I'm a little surprised by that, as well as he looked at Clemson, looked like the number one pick in waiting for like a couple of years, and hasn't played like it. It's only two games, but until it doesn't look way too fast for him, I'm not even going to come close to taking the Jags. So I'll take Arizona and give the 7.5. The Ravens visit the Lions. Baltimore, of course, coming off that incredible comeback victory at home against the Kansas City Chiefs. The Detroit Lions are 0-2 and might be sinking fast. So no surprise, the 1-1 Ravens are same point spread on the road, 7.5-point favorites at the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, you said it. Coming off of that big emotional road win, right?
Home win.
That's right. They had to do that at home. They had to come back from the big deficit at home on a Monday night. And was that Monday night?
Sunday night.
Yes, Sunday night. Oh, man, it's been a long week for me. Don't. I'm taking Detroit because Baltimore coming off of the big win. I'm not taking Detroit to win, but Baltimore, they come off the big win. And, you know, you go on the road and you kind of look uninspired and bored. And it would be so Ravens for them to show up and have to scratch and claw to get a win here against a team that they should just roll up.
And the defense has lost some several players this week to the goop, several starting players. The Ravens defense will be short. Now, on the Lions side, you got to laugh at them a little bit. That's so Lions. I don't have a That's So Lions drop. They're already holding out Jamie Collins, the veteran linebacker who came over to the Lions along with your favorite ex-coach, Azhad, with the pencil behind his ear. Came over to play for him, and he's gone, and now he's not happy. So the Lions are already holding out their veteran linebackers so they can try to trade them. After 2 weeks of football, they're already holding guys out and getting ready to trade them. That is definitely Detroit Lions football right now. However, I concur for the exact same reasons you were saying. That would be so Ravens to go have that huge win against Kansas City to get their identity back, run all over the Chiefs. You know what you got to do. And then you come back out against Detroit, and they're probably going to do something stupid like have Lamar throw the first four or five balls of the game, trying to get, you know, get his confidence back or get him installed as the passer and make sure everybody knows, hey, he's still a real quarterback. He's not very good at quarterback. I keep saying this. No one seems to want to listen to me. Yeah, I concur. They might foul it all up in Motown. I'm worried. I am. And I'm going to concur with you and take the points.
Uh-oh. Are they going to fall in a trap?
Uh-oh. It's an Elvis game. Wow. This might be indeed. God, I haven't used the Elvis drop in so long.
I'm going to dust it off.
What's the name of that damn song?
Did you title it by the song or by Elvis?
There it is. I did it by caught in a trap. I was looking for Suspicious Minds, and I fooled myself.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out.
Yeah, I did it by the actual name that we used as the drops, and I was looking for Suspicious Minds. Then I was looking for Elvis. I didn't have it under that, so that's why it took me so long. So, yeah, nice call there. That definitely is a big trap for the Ravens. Okay, these Cincinnati Bengals and the Pittsburgh Steelers in AFC North action. Both teams are 1-1, and a little hard to get a read on both of them. So this spread is a little surprising, but kind of not really. Cincy is only a 2.5-point underdog at the Pittsburgh Steelers.
This always used to be my go-to upset, right? Bengals at Steelers, just, you know, and even no matter how good or how bad the Bengals were, they're always going to go and they're going to show up big against Pittsburgh. Problem is, Pittsburgh just had what happened to them happen last week with the Raiders coming to town and taking the top off that defense. And did you watch that play? Did you see the play I told you to watch?
No, I didn't get a chance to look for it.
Oh, man. You still got to do yourself a favor and just catch that Derek Carr throw, because it was a thing of beauty. And that's my only fear. I do have the Steelers here, but my only fear is their pass D is pretty brutal. And the Bengals' only move seems to be Joe Burrow deep to Ja'Marr Chase. If right. they can, this is Pickens to Blake to Pickens, right? This might be the new Blake to Pickens. It's just Burrow to Chase. This is it. This is all you got. Ball pops off the screen, and then it drops back into the screen, and there's Ja'Marr Chase walking into the end zone. They connect on that a few times. Yeah, Bengals pull an upset. I think the Steelers, coming off the big loss at home against the Raiders, are good enough to bounce back here. So I'm going to go ahead and take the Steelers.
And T. Higgins won't play for the Bengals. He's got a shoulder injury, so they don't need more Ja'Marr Chase.
See Ja'Marr Chase?
Just more Ja'Marr Chase. He's going to have 20 targets tomorrow. For the Steelers, big injury news. T.J. Watt is out with a groin injury.
He got his bag and got hurt.
Well, it happens sometimes,
I guess. How often does that happen?
Yeah, and the Steelers need him. They need a pass rush desperately. And Deontay Johnson, the wide receiver, is not going to play with a knee injury. What the hell is Ben Roethlisberger going to do now that Deontay is out? Because that's all he does is throw to Deontay Johnson. He forgets that he has other receivers on his team that are kind of good. You might want to use that Juju guy. He's been pretty good. Might want to go to that Chase Claypool kid. He looks like he could be pretty good. This should be a Steelers murdering of Joe Burrow if that pass rush can step up. They won't have T.J. Watt. So I think this is a Melvin Ingram game. I think he needs to be a big factor here, the former Charger. I'll agree with you and take Pittsburgh to step on the Bengals. But I'm kind of worried about that one, too, because the Steelers don't look so hot early on.
Yeah, should have been my lock, but it's not.
Ooh, that's a tease. AFC West action, Chiefs and Chargers. This is at Kansas City. We remember the game last year, week two, at L.A., where Justin Herbert had to come in for Tyrod Taylor after the doctor tried to stab him to death. And Herbert got the job for that point and did not let it go. So here's the sort of rematch of that. Chiefs at 1-1. The Chargers are also at 1-1, but the Chargers are a 7-point underdog at the Chiefs, who might be a little steamed after last week.
You'd think they would be, but I'm still going to go ahead. I'm going to take the Chargers to keep this under a touchdown. Justin Herbert, he's not afraid. He's definitely not afraid of the spot. This isn't a place where I think he's going to be scared to go into. I think he's going to have to throw to keep them in the game. I think they ultimately lose, but I think that he has to throw enough back and forth. This feels like a shootout. Another one of these games I have a feeling is going to just end up being a shootout back and forth, and I'm going to take the Chargers to keep it under the number. It should be an exciting game.
The offense and the over and the over-under will get a boost because there's a couple of big defensive issues in this game for the Chargers. Joey Bosa hasn't practiced all week, so he's not looking very good for the game, and the Chiefs have already ruled out Frank Clark. So both quarterbacks might be able to stand back there and just kind of gunsling all day, so that's good for them. But I love the weeks like this where we see things like really differently on all the games. So KC will be motivated as hell coming off that Baltimore loss, and they need to show Justin Herbert that he's not there yet. He tried to show them in week two last year, almost beat them straight up, the defending champs. I got this as a sunning. I think the Chiefs are pissed as hell off of that game. They had the Ravens down and let them just run right over them and win the game that way. I think they're going to come out and put the smack on the Chargers and show them, hey, kid, son, you're not on our level yet.
You're not ready.
You're not quite ready. And we're mad off of that Baltimore. But yeah, I think the Chiefs are going to stomp them. On to Washington and Buffalo. The Potato Skins and the Bills are both 1-1. But the Potato Skins, of course, are starting Taylor Heinicke again at quarterback, and the Bills have a little bit of an advantage at that position with Josh Allen. So the Potato Skins are 7-point dogs at the Bills.
This game opened at 9.5 and somehow moved down to 7. So there was money coming in on Washington. I call that value. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to take the Bills, give all the points. Taylor Heinicke, he looked great. You know, he threw for 300 yards. He had a really good game last week. The Bills, after that first week loss where they looked pretty inept, they had that get-right moment against Miami last week. And sometimes you need that, right? You get that first week, that fourth game of the preseason now is that week one game now. And then all of a sudden the season seemed like it started last week for Buffalo, and I think it's back to smooth sailing. Washington can play some defense. I mean, obviously that's going to give you a little bit of a scare if you're Buffalo. But Buffalo's defense has actually played pretty well the first 2 weeks so far. Of course, that happens when you play against the Miami Dolphins. But they also played a pretty good defensive game against the Steelers in week one. Their offense just wasn't clicking. Now that the offense looks to be clicking, watch out. I'll take the Bills, give the points.
I don't have a tight fit on this game. I don't have a big feel either way. Project has been underwhelming to start the year, but the Washington defense has been underwhelming as well. They've been getting lit up more than I thought they ever would. So which one bucks up and comes through and puts their stamp on things? I'm agreeing with you in taking Buffalo and giving 7, but that's only because I think they're going to win by like 8. So I don't feel a whole lot of confidence in that pick at all. But actually, it should be an interesting game to watch for those who get that in their area or for those who have the package like you.
I'll be home tomorrow. Rare Sunday at home. So I'll have my red zone going. So I'll be excited. So it's the one nice thing I have about Sundays is I live for the red zone. And with the Packers playing in the evening, it's red zone all day.
Oh, there you go. I still haven't ever checked out that red zone thing. Everyone who does it says it's awesome.
I don't even want to watch the local game. Because give me that for especially for that first 3 hours on at noon when you got those like 8-9 games all going at the same time. Yeah, just give me the red zone all day long.
Do they have commercials during that or just straight action? Oh, okay.
It is just straight action the whole time. Commercial
free. Is there a host for that or does
they have a guy who sort of moderates it and kicks you back and forth from game to game. It explains
but there's
what's
no
going
commercial.
On. Sometimes they'll have what's that?
I said, but there's no commercials.
No commercials.
Like does he have a diaper? What does he do? How does that work? Just sits there for 6 hours and just does all the game. Okay, well, I definitely see why people would love it now that I know that there's no commercials. That's probably just an adrenaline rush for 3 hours.
They just jump to another game. They'll show you a play that you might have missed.
Oh man,
that sounds pretty awesome. It is a great thing.
Yeah. I got to check it out someday. You know how slow I am with everything technology-wise.
Yeah,
how many years did you tell me, dude, once you get HD TV, you're not going to want to go back to watch it? Oh, I'm fine. I got this big cathode ray tube TV. I don't need HD. Come on.
And then what? And then it happened, and you were like,
then the first time I saw HD, I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, this is what they were talking about.
So I'm that guy. I'm behind on everything. But, you know, that's how I roll. All right, moving on to AFC South, Indianapolis, Tennessee. I have no friggin' idea what the Colts are going to do at quarterback. They might go Carson Wentz and his double ankle thing. They might fly Byron Leftwich in and have him carry on the tradition of carrying the quarterback down the field between plays because I don't know how you play quarterback in the NFL with two sprained ankles or whatever he's got. Or they might go Jacob Eason, whoever that is, not Tony Eason. Those of us of a certain age remember Tony Eason. Or that they've actually had Brett Hundley taking the first string reps all week, I believe. So that's, yeah. I don't know. No one knows which way they're going to go. And for the Titans, Bud Dupree is questionable. He's got a knee injury. Taylor Lewan returns. He didn't play last week. He had a knee injury. And I don't know if that's good or bad for Tennessee because Taylor Lewan, of course, in week one, got used as a turnstile by Chandler Jones. So if he wants to come back and be better than that, that'd be great. Colts at 0-2. They are 6-point dogs down here in Nashville at the 1-1 Titans.
I believe the Colts defense is going to admirably keep them in this game, but they have that is a rudderless ship on offense. There's no direction there. Carson Wentz with two bad ankles would just be a stationary target for the Titans to tee off on. And I don't have any trust in Jacob Eason or Brett Hundley. They could be both in the backfield at the same time, and it wouldn't make a difference. They could just play two quarterbacks at the same time, confuse the hell out of the other team. Don't know which one's going to get snapped to. It won't matter. I'll take the Titans here. Give them the offense. Points.
It doesn't matter.
Give me the Titans and give the points.
I got a feeling Hundley will get in one way or another. If he's been taking all the reps, they might start. Because they might want to really start with Wentz, but if he's got two sprained ankles, he's got to come out at some point. I'm sorry. He's not going to finish the game if he's got two sprained ankles. So we might get Brett at that point, and the Titans will then feast once Brett Hundley gets in the game. And the Titans don't even have a pass rush, and they'll still feast because it's Brett Hundley, and he sucks. So I will concur with you and take the Titans and give the six. And now time for the late afternoon action, starting with the Jets visiting the Denver Broncos. Close your ears, Lou in Jersey. We're talking about the 0-2 Jets. Well, we're not going to talk about them much, I don't think. And the impressive 2-0 Denver Broncos and Teddy Bridgewater. Biggest spread of the week. Jets are plus 10.5 at the Broncos.
Yeah, and they're every bit of 10.5 point dogs. They are that bad. I feel bad for Zach Wilson. You play the Panthers in week one, and that defense, which now that we've had three games to look at it, they're pretty good. And then they play the Patriots and Bill Belichick, who eats rookie quarterbacks for breakfast, and then your next trip is up to Denver to play Von Miller and that defense and Teddy Bridgewater on offense. They're moving the ball. They actually look competent on offense. So, you know, Teddy Bridgewater might be one of those, like, most underrated quarterbacks. It seems like he's just always either hurt or he just can't get the fair shake, and it looks like he's getting a chance now in Denver, and he's running with it. I'll take Denver. I'll give them all.
Yeah. And you were mentioning they got to send Zach Wilson out there now in week three against Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, which is just a nightmare. Chubb went on IR with an ankle injury, so he won't be there. And I'm still concurring with you on taking the Broncos because it's still Zach Wilson after Belichick. What he did to him now has to take on Vic Fangio and the Broncos defense. That should be a massacre. So I concur. I will take Denver minus 10.5 as well.
And I took a brief moment while we were doing while we were talking to Lou, and I looked at the Jets schedule. Three might be optimistic. But they do get the Dolphins twice, and they do get the Jags somewhere in this. Maybe.
It's going to take a lot.
The Dolphins are trash.
Oh, speaking of the Dolphins, playing the Las Vegas Raiders, Miami at 1-1. Raiders are 2-0. It's only two games, but they're a success story so far early in this season. Dolphins, Tua time. It's on hiatus. He's got fractured ribs. He's on IR, so for the foreseeable future, Jack Brisket is the man under center in Miami. Dolphins are, maybe this is a surprise, only 3.5-point dogs at the Las Vegas Raiders.
If there was a competent backup that wasn't Jake Brisket in place, if this was Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, back there, or a solid veteran who I had some faith in, I would probably take the Dolphins in this spot. This feels like a classic letdown spot. You know, the Raiders go on the road, they beat the Steelers. Derek Carr, he's the number one passer in the league. That passing offense has just been next level. Problem is that Miami offense, just they can't do anything. They can't run, they can't throw, and they can't score. I'm taking the Raiders. Lock it up.
I'm scared to death of the Vegas pressure, which has been an undersung part of their start. Their pass rush is killing people, crashing down on a terrible Miami Dolphins offensive line. They might put down Tua if Tua was playing. They might put down Jack Brisket. But you know what? Jack Brisket's got a lot better game instinct than Tua. I think he knows how to keep himself clean as opposed to what Tua will be doing, running around like a chicken with his head cut off and making really, really bad mistakes. You know, I just generally lean against the Raiders all the time because they're the Raiders and I don't like the way they're run. Miami 5-3 on the road last year. Vegas only 2-6 at home in their big empty stadium. It's not empty anymore. I understand that. But yeah, go Jack Brisket. I'm taking a fish. So that's really going against your lock.
Wow.
I'm really crapping on it.
Okay.
It's Vegas. They got to spit up at some point. And their running back, Josh Jacobs, is down once again. So Yeah, I'll definitely be interested in that. There's a reason to pay attention to Fish and Raiders now. That's something we definitely didn't think we'd be saying. Now, this is the probable game of the week, which is not going to be a lock on either one of our sides, but we'll still be very interested. Anyway, Tampa Bay and Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. I mixed up Tommy and Tampa. And the Los Angeles Rams, they're both 2-0, the world champions, are on the road, and they are favored by only a point, so basically a pick 'em. But it should be fun. Brady versus Stafford, Tampa minus one at the Rams at SoFi.
The one thing that's really stood out to me, you know, that's not getting a lot of, you know, run or being talked about very much, in how impressive the Bucs have looked in their first two games. And they've looked really good. But boy, you can throw on these guys now. You know, Sean Murphy Bunting is out for the season, and Sean McVay and Matt Stafford, and they do some, you know, play action and some rollouts. And I'll tell you what, you can't run on Tampa, but all you can do is pretend like you're going to run, and that seems like sometimes it draws up the safeties. And Matthew Stafford, he's a veteran quarterback, and he can throw that thing deep. I actually think the Rams spring the upset here against that banged-up secondary of Tampa.
Got the injury news in this one. AB got the goop. Antonio Brown was out, got the coronavirus. Jason Pierre-Paul, he's out. He's got a shoulder injury. On the Rams side, starting a bit of a run of guys who we don't know if they're going to play, but we know the team has made a move out their practice squad and promoted someone at their position, so that seems to be a bad situation. Darrell Henderson, the running back for the Rams, is iffy. He's got ribs, but the Rams promoted someone named Buddy Howell today at running back, so would seem to be an indication that Henderson will not be ready to go. Sonny Michel will be ready to take his place at running back for the Rams. So Stafford and McVay get a real defense to test themselves. They had Chicago and Indianapolis the first two games, which are both okay defenses, and now you get the Buccaneers. But how the Rams handle Brady is the key to this game, in my opinion, because how many years have we been talking about it, and what do we say? How do you beat Tom Brady, whether it's New England
or
Tampa Bay?
Get there with four.
Bust them in the fucking mouth, and if you can do it with four like the Rams can, all the better. Pressure and zone behind him, and yeah, I think that's going to be the key, and that's how it's going to happen. The Rams and Aaron Donald get at him on the front line, and they drop all their other guys back and zone it up and make Tommy try to figure out how to beat him. And missing Antonio Brown would appear to be a big weapon. He's really turned himself into a playmaker again, and it's so sad, Brown's career, the way that it's turned, mostly due to his own stupidity. He really was one of the best receivers in the league with the Steelers. So it's not as shouldn't be a surprise that he was doing so well with the Buccaneers, but going to miss this game. I think that makes a difference. So I'm going to concur with you and take LA. What should be a really fun game to watch. But that's it. Bust them in the fucking mouth. And that's how you do it against Tom Brady. After all these years, that's still the way to beat Tom Brady. On to the Seahawks and the Vikings. Seattle at 1-1, Minnesota at 0-2, and therefore, no surprise, the Seahawks are the road favorites. They give 2 points at the Vikings.
Yeah, a bit of a heartbreaking loss last week, don't you think? The way that went down for the Vikings. But on the positive side, they found their offense again. They've now, after two games, Kirk Cousins has been putting up some yards. I know, I believe Dalvin Cook is a little nicked up for this one. He's questionable for this game. They do have a serviceable backup there. We might see some road rust in this one, which we always know what that road rust can look like. I think the Vikings are the more desperate team. I don't think that this is a team that we expected to start the season 0-3, and neither did they. So if you're going to get the fight, you're going to get it all from the Vikings in this game. I think they somehow find a way to scratch and claw their way to their first win.
Yeah, Dalvin has an ankle. He hasn't practiced all week. That's another one. Vikings promoted former Lion Amir Abdullah from their practice squad. So that
he's a guy.
He's not Dalvin Cook, and neither is their actual backup, who is his name is
Alexander Madison.
Yeah, Madison. That's the guy. And he's good. He's not Dalvin Cook. So yeah, that would be a bad indicator. And I'm a Dalvin Cook fantasy owner, so believe me, I'm keeping my eye on that, on any news that I can find about that, because that would appear to mean I have to look at somebody else to start at running back tomorrow. But fascinating game, actually, to me. Seattle versus Minnesota. Both secondaries should get lit on fire all game long. We know Seattle is the Legion of Room, and we know Minnesota has had trouble covering guys. Dalvin would have been the difference if he was healthy. He's not healthy, so he might play, and he might be ineffective, and he might not play at all. Seattle doesn't have a Dalvin Cook, but Minnesota doesn't have a Dalvin Cook, so because he's going to be not a factor as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to go with Russ to pull it out on the road, because the Vikings don't seem to know how to stop anybody in the air. So I will take Seattle and give the 2. And hopefully this won't be the game where I should have got cute and Seattle wins by only 1. On Sunday Night Football, the Green Bay Packers visit the San Francisco 49ers. Which Green Bay do we get? Which Aaron Rodgers do we get? They are 1-1. And really, Aaron, from what you were telling me, from what I've been reading, they still didn't look all that impressive, even though they rolled up the Detroit Lions on Monday Night Football.
They did the second half.
Okay.
Like, they woke up. They came out of halftime of that game a different team.
And the Niners looking like they're bouncing back well, 2-0 start. Cop-out line, Packers +3 at the Niners.
Yeah, if there's anything that I've seen for watching Aaron Rodgers for his whole career, you know, and he is the guy of all the made-up beef, right? But no team does Aaron Rodgers have more of a made-up beef with than the San Francisco 49ers. His hometown team, the team that he wanted to draft him, the team that drafted Alex Smith #1, and it has been his life's goal to shove it up the 49ers' ass every chance he gets. I'm going to take the Packers here because that's all you need. Just all Rodgers seems to need is motivation. When they lose, it's because he's bored. I don't think he's going to be bored on this game. And it's primetime game.
Running back situation for the Niners. Trey Sermon is up and Elijah Mitchell is down with a shoulder injury. He will not play. Another former Lion, Kerryon Johnson, gets promoted from the practice. Former Detroit Lions for 500, Alex, getting promoted all over the place today. I don't know if Mr. Is Sim still alive, or is he no longer with us?
Barry Sanders is coming out of retirement for somebody this week.
And could probably still play his ass off today, honestly,
yeah.
If we're being honest.
He'd make some guys miss.
Even in the Packers squishing Detroit, the Packers didn't look all that impressive. Like you said, second half they woke up. But I'm looking at the airport, the little bit that I could see, you know, craning my neck, looking over some Home Run Inn pizza that I got at Midway while we were waiting for our next flight. Oh, God, I miss Home Run Inn pizza. I saw something you had been referencing before the season even started. Saw some terrible Kevin King coverage. Like, what is he doing out there? Seems like he doesn't know where he is or where to go or what to do. Like, how long have you been playing in a league at this point? I think it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be close, but I'm going to side with the Niners. I think just as a whole right now, they're the unit to trust. The Packers, I guess I still – so got some residue off of that New Orleans game. Like, I don't know if I can trust them. I don't know what to believe. And I think the Niners defense is trying to get back into the form that they used to be in, and they should be tough. So I'm going to take Jimmy Garoppolo to go 3-0 and beat the Pack. And Monday Night Football, NFC East action, the Eagles and the Cowboys, they're both 1-1. And I was shocked to see this because Cowboys usually get all the love, but cop-out line, Eagles and Jalen Hurts. +3 at the Cowboys.
Yeah, and we use that term loosely, I believe, action.
Yeah.
But, the Dan Quinn Dallas defense is trash. So they're going to be able to let the Eagles hang around in this game. The Eagles can run. They are going to be effective throwing because everybody can be effective throwing against that secondary. And I have a feeling, again, we're going to see a game that's back and forth. That's going to think it's going to be high scoring. The Cowboys get the big primetime spot, and it's Mike McCarthy and Dan Quinn. So, yeah, give me the Eagles to win.
And I'm worried about the Cowboys. They got a lot of injuries. Michael Gallup's out. Amari Cooper has bad ribs. He's going to try to play. But even that, I think the Cowboys will pull it out. I think they get a bit of a wake-up call, and Zeke will respond. He's been threatened to get benched, and I think the Cowboys cover and win it by maybe 10. More on our after show. To our VIP after show program. We are doing battle on a lot of games this week. So this week three, I guess everything is coming to a head now. We both probably feel like we've been, you know, watching enough ball to figure out who's decent, who's bad, and we're making some informed picks, although I didn't really watch much last week.
That's the point that I was going to make, is it's somebody who's only watched week one against somebody who's watched 2 weeks of football. So this is going to be interesting, because I'm like, yeah, I'm surprised that it's this divergent. But then I'm thinking, well, you didn't watch anything last week.
I read a lot this week.
Yeah. Okay. You know, we'll somehow find a way to split these games.
Probably. Tell us how many that is. This is a lot this week.
Got to be like 9.
That many?
You took the Dolphins, for Christ's sake.
It looks like 8.
Okay.
It was a lot. Yeah.
I was thinking we could get close to double digits there, but then we went on a run of like the end of the morning games and into the early afternoon. We actually started agreeing on a bunch, but yeah, we'll go 4-4.
You're probably right about that. Yeah,
or we'll figure out a way to go 4-3-1, so you can get one more game on me, because you're on this mission to win one game over me every week.
Keep it up as long as I can.
But last week, you got that Thursday nighter on me, so this time I knew well enough not to take take the Texans. I wasn't rolling with the Texans 3 times in a row. I knew when to jump off of that train.
As soon as Davis Mills jumped on, so good job out of you.
And good for you not doing the usual move where I jump off and then you jump on. You're like, oh, man, the Texans have covered 2 times in a row. I'm going to jump on that. And then, right off the side of the cliff.
It was actually a shocker that as much as I rolled, the only thing I really didn't do putting my support behind Carolina was, like, bet them, like, put actual cash on.
Oh,
but
you,
everything
you
else.
That, yeah. Yeah.
Like picking them as my lock, running to the waiver wire and picking up their defense and starting them in fantasy. Like everything I did supporting the Carolina Panthers over the Houston Texans this week, that usually completely blows up in my face. So for that to actually have worked was awesome. And it was a bit of a sweat because, like you were saying, that this Davis Mills kid found his groove in the 2-minute warning before halftime and actually started looking decent. And I'm like, if they do that all in the second half, this is some trouble. But he couldn't put it together in the second half. He wasn't very good. That whole team is not very good. And
they even found a way with Christian McCaffrey getting hurt.
That's the other part that scared the fuck out of me. Like, oh, my God. They showed the close-up of his hamstring popping, and it's like, oh, no. So to see whoever his backup was come in and just keep running into
the
back
of his kid I've never heard of. His name is Hubba Bubba.
Chubba Hubbard.
Well, you know what I'm calling him from now on. So I hope he has a very quiet career, because I don't want to have to talk about Hubba Bubba too much on this show.
Do they sell that still, Hubba Bubba? I haven't heard that brand name since we were 8 years old.
I tell you what, I saw this. Well, we're aging ourselves. So like anybody like old like us got that joke. Everybody else is like, what? Probably think I'm horribly racist right now.
No, Hubba Bubba.
What'd you call him?
It's a brand name of bubblegum when we were children, and I have no idea if they still sell it.
That's the new running back. The new starting running back, apparently, for the Carolina Panthers, is Hubba Bubba.
Oh, we could fill so many hours just going back and coming up with brand names of things that don't exist anymore. Hubba Bubba, that I don't know if that went out with Tab Soda or what, but
it's right there up on the shelf. They're on the shelf next to that Canfield Diet Chocolate Fudge Soda.
Oh my God! How do you remember that?
Because I drank it one time, one can. That was when you could still buy soda by the can, and that Canfield's crap was always 10 for $1. And there's a reason why, because it tasted like ass.
The same reason the Weiler's Kool-Aid packets were so much cheaper, because they were lesser quality.
Yeah. Man, Canfield Diet Chocolate Fudge.
I may have tried that, because I'm sure I did.
It was the worst thing I think I've ever tried. But, like I said, you could buy one can at a time, so that meant that a can was a dime. Think about that.
Right.
A can of soda was a dime.
That's really going back in the day. It wasn't worth the dime that you spent on it.
It wasn't worth it. If I had a dime in my pocket and that was the only thing in the store, I wouldn't drink. I'd wait for it to rain in my mouth before I drank that.
That's interesting, because the most disgusting thing I've ever drank also involves chocolate, which is so weird because I love chocolate so much, and I'm sure you do, because who doesn't love chocolate? It's chocolate. But the most horrible thing I've ever tasted in my life, after I turned 21, I didn't try a whole lot of alcoholic drinks, but I tried a few. I tried beer. I tried some daiquiris and fruity crap and whatnot. And one time I decided to try a chocolate martini, and that thing tasted like cough syrup with some M&Ms melted in it or something. It was so nasty. And it was expensive, and I didn't drink it at all. Like, I took like 2 or 3 or 4 sips, like forcing the first sip was so awful that I could have stopped there. But because I paid $8 or whatever for it, I kept going thinking maybe it might get better. But if it doesn't, I'm still drinking it because I paid $8 for it. And after like 4 sips, I was like, nope, can't do it. Can't finish it. Can't keep drinking this. It was nasty. I just had to stop. So it's amazing that the most disgusting thing either one of us have had involves chocolate. But
it was
chocolate.
The 80s.
Chocolate is great.
I just remember it was the 80s. They added it. I think it was Juul, it was 10 cents a can. It was like, the can, not all the Canfield soda was terrible. It wasn't good. I mean, it was clearly like the generic or the knockoff brand of soda. But you could get away with drinking their, their generic stuff, the regular like knockoff cola or the knockoff orange. But they came out Diet Chocolate Fudge Soda is as disgusting as it sounds.
Because the chocolate fudge soda was bad enough, but if you want chocolate fudge soda, but you're watching your figure, we're gonna give you the Diet Chocolate Fudge Soda.
I cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it.
Can't do it. And it's the 80s. So did you barely eat there? If it's diet and it's in the 80s, are we talking the saccharin sweetener? Or is it, had they come out with NutraSweet by then? Had they come out with something better than the saccharin?
I'm looking it up right now. It came out in 1984. It's got its own Wikipedia page. It was sweetened by aspartame. So yeah, it was the fake stuff. That was the stuff that I hate. So I can't do anything with aspartame because that's all I taste. But
yeah,
wait a minute. They just, Bob Green from the Chicago Tribune reviewed the product and described it as tasting like a calorie free hot fudge sundae.
Was that him trying to compliment it?
It was so disgusting. I think so. It actually helped increase their sales. It was so nasty.
I don't have a recall of it. Like I said, I probably tried it because I love chocolate, but I don't remember it. So that's an indicator right there. If I tried it and don't remember it, that means it was terrible. Again, chocolate martini, I remember because that was beyond terrible. Again, that was cough syrup with some chocolate in it, and that was just disgusting.
Apparently, it's still out there somewhere in the wild. You can still find
this.
The brand is still around. It's been sold, but apparently some of these are still in production. That's just
chocolate,
can't believe it.
Soda.
Yeah.
It's
they also produced a diet cherry chocolate fudge and a diet peanut chocolate fudge soda.
Okay. All right, someone was drunk and was trying to come up with different things there.
Yeah.
You were mentioning the generic sodas and or the off-brand sodas, and it reminded me of the generic sodas at Jewel, which were also very cheap and, you know, in that same neighborhood of like 10 cents a can or something like that. And yeah, same thing. Like certain flavors were passable, like the grape and the colas. But I remember the Jewel cream soda specifically because it was basically water. And I love creams. Yeah. I love cream soda. It's kind of, it's almost hard for me to for someone to mess up cream soda because it's cream soda. Like I very rarely have had a bad cream soda, but the Jewel cream soda was terrible because it was basically just water. It tasted so watery. It was just not good. But all the other cream sodas, I'm down with them. I'm always good for a cream soda. I miss the A&W cream soda. I'm sure they still have it, but for some reason I don't really see it.
A&W is still around. There's an there used to be an A&W here in town. Now they've mostly merged them into like gas stations.
Right.
But you can still find A&W. I never told you my worst A&W story.
Oh, you haven't?
I was on a trip with my sister, and we had stopped somewhere and got a root beer float from A&W, right? And I took it back to the hotel, and I just couldn't, you know, I was full. It was just like, oh, okay, I just couldn't finish it, right? So I left it on the table, and when I woke up in the morning, the ice cream hadn't melted.
What?
True story. It was still floating on top of the root beer.
So, in other words, that probably wasn't really ice cream?
Correct. What was in the root beer float? To this day, I'm like afraid to know what was in the what's their ice cream made out of? That should have melted and just
like
become
McDonald's food, right?
Yeah, that should have become like that yummy mix of root beer and ice cream. That's like the bottom of a root beer float. It shouldn't still be floating on top.
Well, you didn't give it
and
long
it
enough.
Clearly it, was.
Give it 2 weeks.
It was also not 26 degrees in the hotel room. It was disgusting. And I don't honestly think I've ever had one since. And this was, this had to be over 20 years ago that happened. That's probably still not melted somewhere.
Right. Like those, some places will have displays of McDonald's food from 1994. And it's, the burger is still intact. It's like, this is not what food's supposed to do. It's supposed to degrade at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ice cream and a root beer float, where you would think the root beer is above freezing, the ice cream is below freezing, the above freezing element usually wins out pretty quickly. It does not leave the ice cream still floating on the top of the root beer the next morning.
Unless.
That went immediately in the toilet.
And probably messed up the sewage system wherever you were.
It was in Minneapolis. Otherwise, you would have thought maybe I was in Flint, but I was in Minneapolis. Because then they would have pegged that whole water crisis on me.
Of course.
It was root beer floats.
Daniel Sargent took a look at that root beer float, and she had a question about it. She was
winning the game 72-71.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much everyone's reaction to that.
Pretty much fine.
Since we're going off of Kings and Non-Sugar, are there any other foods you can think of that you haven't had in years because you had a bad experience with it and it just left you like, no, never again?
Not that I can think of, you know. I'm trying to, you know, something that I just won't give another chance because it was just like so bad that I can't do it ever again. you know, and I've been, I'm sure, in plenty of situations where I've gotten something nasty or undercooked or in situations like that. But I can't think of anything off the top of my head where it's just, no, I will never touch that again, no matter what. I mean, there are things I won't eat. I won't eat olives.
Really?
You know, there's just, I hate olives. They're nasty. The devil's fruit. Brussels sprouts. My wife's always trying to get me to eat Brussels sprouts. Oh, the worst.
I'm not a
fan
of them.
She tries to, like, doctor them up, butter, bacon. Yeah, you can't Paula Deen these things and make them taste any better.
Oh, come on, honey. I can make anything taste good.
Always going to just taste like nasty-ass Brussels sprouts. And I think that goes back to my childhood. I hated them with English and late-night bacon.
It's all good, baby.
Oh, English peas. What was that? Just peas and butter?
Yes.
Literally? But it's English peas.
Uh-huh.
I think that was the name of your fantasy team one year.
Because it's so stupid.
And I think mine was late night bacon.
That's not a recipe. Taking peas and putting butter on them. That's not
you
a
mean taking
recipe.
A few strips of... You mean taking a few strips of microwavable bacon and putting them on a paper plate with a paper towel over them and putting them in the microwave isn't a recipe that should be in a cookbook?
That's also not a recipe.
That was also not Paula Deen. That was Rachel Ray.
Oh.
With the late night bacon.
Our apologies to Paula Deen.
Yeah. But no, English peas, that's not a recipe either. Just taking a can of peas and dumping half a stick of butter in it is not a recipe.
Oh.
Now, I would call that cooking if I did it.
Right. Well, but that's not a cookbook. They don't have men's cookbooks out there for confirmed
bachelors.
If I
put more than one thing together, it's cooking.
That's cooking, sure.
My wife is walking by right now, cranking up. If I take cereal and pour it in the bowl and add milk, I cooked.
You didn't cook anything, but you prepared a meal.
What if I make toast... And then put butter on it. I cooked. I really cooked crazy the other day because I took cans of tuna, and then I added ingredients to that tuna, and then made toast and made tuna fish sandwiches. I cooked.
Wow.
That's the extent of my cooking. I'm not much.
That's a lot for you.
Actually, the only thing I can actually kind of halfway decent cook is eggs. I make good eggs.
That's good.
Yeah. I do that okay.
My wife and some coworkers were getting on me because I combined tuna with something and tried to make sandwiches out of them, and they were like, that doesn't go together.
You mean like canned tuna? Your Starkist? Yeah. All right. Here's your recipes. This is all you need. Miracle Whip and some sweet relish. That's all you got to put. Do that.
There you go.
Put it on some toast with a slice of American cheese. It's really good. That's your tuna melt.
And now you've cooked a tuna melt.
Oh, I like I know people like my wife's family were like blown away when I told them I put sweet relish in my tuna. That was like the way I was always brought up. That was the way we ate it. And I didn't realize it was some like ancient Chinese secret.
Because they know you don't really cook much, so they were probably impressed that you were able to add that ingredient in.
My wife doesn't like my cooking because I like botched a meal so bad when we first started, you know, going out, and I tried to make chicken in the crock pot, right? She's like, well, you just take something and you throw it in the crock pot and then you put a liquid in there. So I put the chicken in there and I used sweet tea as my liquid. I thought it would give it like a nice crust, right? I cooked the chicken in the sweet tea, but then I also threw like peaches in there, right? I was just looking for stuff. I threw peaches. I threw some cinnamon sticks, and the peaches were like those half peaches that you get out of the can. Apparently, when you put everything in a crock pot in the liquid, everything starts to, like, absorb its other's flavors, right?
Yes.
So my wife gets home from work. Well, she's my girlfriend at the time. She married me after this. And All I can say is the peaches tasted like chicken.
Yeah, you got some chicken-flavored peaches.
And I don't know of anybody ever who can claim that. They actually made peaches taste like chicken. But I did. I haven't had to cook many times since then.
What she did, what she,
goes,
I'm sure.
Like, okay, where's the pot? Got sweet tea? Got canned peaches? I'm going to redeem myself. No, it's okay. I'll make dinner.
Right. That's what she figured out after marrying you, is that you did that on purpose.
I'm bringing it. I'll pick something up on the way home.
You did on purpose. So
we'll order Chinese.
She would never.
I wish I was that smart to botch something so bad on purpose. I actually take credit for that, but no, it was an actual effort.
Well, I don't know if you're the food person to ask this opinion, but I'll do it anyway.
I'm good at eating. I could be like a food critic. I can't cook.
Same here. So all I did was I like tuna salad, but I hate mayonnaise, right? So I took the canned tuna, and I wanted a tuna salad sandwich. I wanted something quick at lunch.
Yeah.
But I don't like mayonnaise.
Oh,
all I did.
Don't tell me you used like ranch or something.
I used hummus. All I did was mix up some tuna and some hummus.
Ooh.
And I
you should have. You'd have been better off using ranch.
Oh, come on. I liked it. It wasn't like plain. It wasn't plain hummus. It was like, the garlicky type hummus. So
I can't handle hummus.
Oh, it's just brown chickpeas. There's nothing wrong with hummus.
I don't like hummus.
Okay, well, you're on the long list because nobody else liked my invention. I thought I invented a new kind of tuna salad, and I liked it, and nobody else liked it. So I'm all alone.
You know what you needed? Sweet tea.
And peaches and
peaches.
Relish.
Yeah.
Mixed it all together.
That sounds gross. Even to me.
It sounds like Indian stew.
No, I'm just not a hummus guy. I don't know if it's a smell or not a big fan of hummus.
Okay. I don't eat it all the time, but I like hummus. It's a nice little dip.
For creativity.
I tried. It's more than I usually try to do as far as meal preparation. Usually I just buy whatever's frozen.
Oh, man. And all this starts because I made fun of the guy's name.
The Hubba Bubba.
Hubba Bubba.
Kings of non-sequitur. We can go on a tangent.
Well, that's, we had Lou from Jersey. Thought this was a different show.
This isn't Kings of non-sequitur, Lou. This is now, in much less detail, the podcast. Different show. Because totally
it's Kings
different.
Of non-sequitur, the off-season version of In Much
Less
Detail,
the podcast.
To
the branding. It's all about the branding.
That's right. As soon as, because obviously it's not the same show when we're not talking about football.
That's right. Talking about anything else.
Show.
Any subject, any topic, anything goes is the way I put it, I believe.
Yeah. And more often than not, that is accurate.
Yeah, so I have my foods that I don't eat either. Being black, it appears to be controversial that I refuse to eat chitlins, and I don't know why that's controversial because chitlins
are
disgusting.
I don't think that's controversial, but I can say I don't think that's controversial.
But you're not black.
I don't. I know. I cannot speak to it.
As I checked, anyway.
Well, you know what? If I decide to be, I am.
If you identify?
If I identify, you can't say nothing.
That's right. call you Jason Dolezal.
It doesn't matter. Me and Sean King and Rachel Dolezal, we're all hanging out together. You can't judge. Don't judge me. You're discriminating against me. It's reverse racism, man.
Yeah, I don't know why every time I meet black people and the subject of food comes up and I reveal that I've never tried chitlins and don't ever intend
now,
to.
Do you volunteer that or do they just assume that you do or do you get asked? I mean.
Well, so at work, I'm sure there's. Well, I say I'm sure, but I would assume it's happened to you in situations where you're bored in a group of people and food comes up, the topic of food comes up.
Oh, sure.
And yeah,
all
so
the time.
It's just, yeah. Yeah, so it's just something like that where food comes up at work because we're bored and, oh, I like this and I don't like this and this and then, oh, I mean, right. What do you eat or what do you not, what do you refuse to eat? Oh, I've never tried chitlins. I don't know why anyone would. You've never tried chitlins? Boy, put some hot sauce on it and put this and that. And you ain't yet, man, you got to come to my house. I'm going to cook you up some chitlins. No, I don't care how well you think you make them. I'm not putting pig intestines in my mouth. And not only that. Actually, much more important than that, because before I ever knew what chitlins were, my grandmother was making them in the house, and I was smelling them. And that is reason number 1 through 100 why I will never try chitlins, is because they smell so disgusting. Like, have you ever smelled chitlins being cooked?
No, no.
I can't even describe it to you. It's worse than ass. And when you think about what they are, which is pig intestines, it makes sense that it smells like that. But it smells worse than that because it smells like ass, like combined with garbage, right? It smells like it's that's the only way I can really think to describe it. It just smells like a hot pile of garbage in 90 degree weather with some stinky, shitty drawers thrown on top of it. That's what chitlin smells like. I'm not putting something in my mouth ever as long as I live that smells like that. All right. And that's all before right. I found out what they were.
Well, that's like when we were on our way out to Albuquerque and my wife and I stopped at the place outside Omaha that had the Rocky Mountain oysters. And, you know, it was like they were famous for it. It was like the home of the testicle festival. I'm serious.
Nice.
And we went there.
Speaking
of
brandy.
And they were good. My wife had some.
Okay.
But, you know, it's all fried up and cooked. Eh.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, good for you. That's all I can say is good for you. I can't.
I mean, it's not something I'm craving. You know, so like my wife's like, oh man, we got to go back there. I got to go get me some. balls.
Give me some bull balls.
The only balls I'm eating are cheese balls. Those are the only balls I'm at.
I'm having malt balls. I love those malt balls.
Oh yeah, some Whoppers
at the theaters. Yeah.
Yeah, get yourself some Whoppers. Those are good.
Mm-hmm. That's probably why.
But yeah, I'm definitely staying away from the actual ones.
And like the only other thing I can really think of that's like the two things that I had as a kid that I actually tried and don't want to ever try again would be liver. I don't know if you ever had liver.
Yeah,
and are you not a fan?
It's not anything that left a mark so bad that I will never eat it again.
Yeah, it did to me because it's just I don't know why, but it's ugh. And then sweet potatoes or yams. What happened there was a bad incident in kindergarten where I had a few too many and did not have a fun night.
Sure.
And as a result, I tend to stay away from.
Well, I love me some yams.
A lot of people do. They're not bad.
Yeah.
I just
I had that happen. I was a kid and I remember I used to eat raw green peppers.
Ooh.
You know, I used to love it. I could just sit there and just take a green pepper and just eat that thing raw and then I got the flu or a cold or something as a kid and you know, saw him a second time and
that's the end of that.
And I couldn't eat green peppers for years. I couldn't have them in anything, on anything, near me. I couldn't smell them. If I saw them on a Jewel ad or a Dominic's ad, I was just like, nope, get away from me. It made me sick just because of that feeling, you know?
Yeah, trauma.
Yeah, and it was nothing. It wasn't the pepper's fault that I got sick.
Right.
But that was, that was sort of the triggering event, and it was the last thing I had, and I blamed the peppers because I was a kid.
Sure, I understand that. I went about maybe 10 or 15 years between eighth grade and when I became an adult where I couldn't eat peanut butter cookies, which I love so much.
I had that too. I had that happen too on a New Year's.
Oh, just had too many.
Got sick
just
off
too many.
Yeah, my mom made those peanut butter cookies with the Hershey's Kiss on top.
Mm.
It got sick, you know, bam.
Yeah.
Couldn't eat them for years.
Yeah, that's crazy. These weren't homemade. These were like the generic store brand. And I even remember exactly what I was watching when I bought them, not because I got sick, but because of the traumatic situation on TV that I was watching. I got sick eating generic peanut butter cookies, getting ready to watch game one of the 1989 World Series between the Giants and the A's, which was postponed for however many days because of an earthquake that killed people. And I was just sitting there just absentmindedly shoving these cookies into my mouth, watching TV going, oh my God, I can't believe I'm watching. This was like the, you know, before 9/11, before the Persian Gulf and all of that, this was like the next biggest traumatic thing that we watched as a kid, right after, you know, several years after the NASA thing, the Challenger.
Yeah.
This was
like
the
next
thing.
We were in school for that one.
Right, right. But like,
I remember, them rolling the
TV.
Yeah, rolling the TV into the room, you know, because, you know, Mr. Dominic busts into the room. The Challenger exploded. We're like, what? You know, yeah, I remember Miss Allen, she grabs the cart, right, rolls the thing over, plugs in the TV, turns it on, and like the very first image that popped up on the screen was the replay of the thing blowing up.
Yeah, just big ball of fire.
Yeah. Like, oh, it looks fine.
Yeah, try to erase that from your memory.
And, yeah, and she's crying.
Yeah.
You know, because that was the, you know, the teacher blew up. And, but yeah, that, like that was like the traumatic like thing. And then, yeah, the earthquake, for especially for us who are like baseball fans and sports fans, and it was baseball on national TV, you know, and we were limited to just watching local teams. And I watched that happen live, I'm sure, same as you did.
Yeah, we were in our own household, and I was chomping away on cookies and just watching and just shocked. Just couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
But yeah, we had a lot of throwback memories tonight in a short amount of time.
It tends to happen. What were you talking about? Hubba Bubba?
Right.
We talked about that Thursday night football game, and all of them. We were talking about Hubba Bubba and Nasty Soda, and now we're talking about the earthquake in San Francisco, where the when somebody decided that maybe it wasn't a good idea to build the interstate on top of itself.
Oh. Yeah, it kind of comes tumbling down like a Lego house, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And then you had the you got to give the bottom deck credit. It didn't fall too, so everybody just got smushed. But I remember that all of a sudden the feed comes back, and then all of a sudden they're talking about like all the pandemonium, and then it goes to all the national news reports, and you're seeing like the city's on fire and the roads have collapsed, and yeah, that was a big one. It wasn't the big one, but it was a big one.
It was a very big one, yes. A lot of casualties. And yeah, really, really bad time. And like I said, just what you were saying, the anticipation of watching the World Series was a little different back then.
Yeah, that's all you're excited for.
Because you didn't have ESPN. You didn't have all these nationally televised games all the time. You had like one national game a week, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, it was, you know, if you didn't live in a market that you were able to see a team's games regularly, then you were just kind of shit out of luck and waiting for all-star games and playoffs and World Series, because that was the only time you could really watch whole games. So, yeah, it was crazy. So you're talking about the long week that you have, and I'm not going to press you on anything, whatever you want to share, if anything, about your long week. And if you don't want to share anything, that's completely understandable too.
Oh, no, I mean, you got the goops. The goop has been going around here through the school system. So yeah, both my kids, are, you know, waiting, my daughter's waiting for a test, and the other cute factor, has his test tomorrow morning. So Trin went this morning and got her test and told her to study hard last night for a test. And my son is in bed. They're both in bed, and he's studying hard for his test tonight. But yeah, they've been mildly symptomatic, but definitely symptomatic, you know?
Yeah.
So you don't know. You can't be too careful. Is it allergies? Is it a cold? But my wife, you know, after Thursday, my daughter had kind of a rough day. Was it Thursday? No, it was Wednesday was sort of the start. And then Thursday, she got home from school and was really like, it was like, okay. My wife had gotten some of the take-home tests, right, the ones you get from Walgreens, just to be safe. And we had a, she got one for everybody. And I haven't, I'm the only one who hasn't taken one yet. And she gave one to Trin on Thursday. And immediately, whatever the positive result on that, I guess it shows like a pink line and a blue line if you're positive. As soon as she like put the stuff in there, it was like, bam, pink line. It's like, okay. So the at-home test came back immediately positive. But then for my son, it came back negative. She calls me at work, and it's like, oh, I have about an hour left to go in my work day. And I'm like, well, I can't leave because I have to lock up the place. You know, it's not one of those where they can just pull me out. And so, like, by the time I call somebody who has keys to come and lock up the place for me, it would have been that hour. So I waited out the rest of the evening, closed up, but called HR. You know, it was a full intention that, you know, oh, yeah, she had a positive at-home test, and she's symptomatic, that I basically have to quarantine until she gets that result. So that's what I'm doing right now. So I'm on sort of a, you know, semi-quarantine. I'm, like, awaiting the result. So apparently the test that she took is accurate 85% of the time.
Yeah.
So 1 in 6 chance. So there's a chance. I'm saying there's a chance, but she's got a 1 in 6 chance that it's actually a false positive.
Right.
You know.
And you were saying that she was, you know, was symptomatic and was, and had some days where she wasn't feeling too good, but was already starting to feel a little better.
Today she said she was starting to feel a little bit better, but she's still having. She's not dealing with like as well. She, I don't know. It comes and it goes. She gets like really stuffy. But with her, the thing that I've noticed the most is fatigue. Like she gets really white. Like she'll walk up the stairs and she's out of breath.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, she's not like the most athletic kid, but she could definitely walk up a flight of stairs without getting tired or winded, you know? And, even my son tonight, my wife, every once in a while, just randomly have the kids do some sit-ups, do some jumping jacks, right? Just do something all, you know, we've been cooped up in the house all day, and then she'll just be like, oh, you know, hey, do some exercise. And she told my son, do 20 push-ups, and he could bang out 30 push-ups like it's nothing. And he got to about 8 or 9, and he was done.
Ooh.
Like he was turning red, and he was just like, I can't do it anymore. And I was like, wow. And now he's coughing a lot. So he's showing, like, so it's weird because they're both showing completely different symptoms for things, but a cold or allergy, you don't know. So that's why we've both, that's why at some point here, we've got them both out for tests.
Right.
So we'll find out. My wife is convinced that she's going to be positive. I've got a bad feeling she will be too, but I'm holding out though. I'm being the, you know, I'm the one holding out for the negative test here. One, I just don't want my kids to have it.
Right.
You know, and I'm trying to be the optimistic one, which is rare. But my wife is the one who administered the at-home test, and the thing is, you know, when it says it's 85% positive, that doesn't give you a whole lot of wiggle room. And she's symptomatic, and, like, kids in her class have had it. Like, it's gone through her class, you know, and so there's a lot of things that would point to the fact that that would make sense that she took an at-home test, considering that her friends have it and, you know, other kids in her class have been on quarantine, you know. So we'll see. I'm either going to be back at work in 2 or 3 days or I'm not going back to work for a week and a half.
Yeah.
Because apparently the way the rules are for my job, if there's a in-the-house case, I got to be home for 10 days. You got to be safe.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to expose other people, you know, because I don't have, you know, I'm not showing any clear and obvious signs of anything, but I could be spreading something to somebody without even knowing it.
Exactly.
So I'm at home, and tomorrow I'll be watching football. We'll hopefully – she got that test this morning. They said it takes up to 2 days or could take 2 days, so we're hoping that tomorrow or Monday we find out. This is just the part that sucks. The part that sucks is waiting for them to call you.
Yeah.
You know, and in the town that I'm in, we had been so low where anybody who went for a test, you were getting like immediate results. But now that the numbers are starting to shoot up again here, the tests are starting to lag because they're doing so many of them.
Yep.
So it also doesn't help that she got it on a Saturday. She got the only, my wife called to get this on Thursday night, called to get my daughter in for her test. And the test that my daughter took this morning was the only spot they had left for the whole day today.
Wow.
So my son, that's why he's going tomorrow, because they didn't have two open spots for Saturday. My daughter literally got the last one today.
Mm.
So that's how full up they are. So he's going right away first thing tomorrow morning. And, you know, we've kind of joked that the ironic part would be that, you know, she comes back negative and then he ends up being the positive one.
Yeah.
But now he's starting to cough a lot. You know, getting winded, but yeah, it's a virus. Virus is going to do what virus is going to do.
Yeah, and I think you guys are realistic and know what the likelihoods are and whatnot. So,
I'm not going to be fatalistic at all about this. I mean, neither one of them are showing anything that's like you're worried, right? Like nothing worse than what I've been through with them for colds or flus. I don't know if I've ever told the story about my son on the show, but when he was like three, I want to say he was either three or four. He might have been in 4K at the time. You know, comes out of his room, and I'm up here. I'm on the upstairs, and because his bedroom's on the downstairs, and he's sitting on the couch, and it's, I don't know, 9:30, 10 o'clock, 10:30, and my wife's like, well, Grant, you know, he's got a fever. I'm like, what? Oh, okay. So I come down the stairs and I go, and he's sitting on the couch, and I get, I don't know, 6 feet away from him, and I could feel the heat coming off.
Mm.
I was like, wow, what the hell? So, you know, I grab the thermometer and I take his temperature, and it was like 106.
Ooh.
Yeah. For kids, that's not good.
No.
Remember when I had a 105 something fever one time, that got me in the hospital because it turned out I had like a kidney infection. I was in the hospital for a week. So I'm thinking, you know, I was, I'll tell you, way more worried then than I am about any of this right now. Cause that was like emergency room, you know, all kinds of stuff. They just sent him home. Literally. They took this kid, 4-year-old kid with 106 degree temperature. My wife takes him to the emergency room. My daughter's up, you know, with me because she's freaking out because she's all sad because she pretends to have, you know, she's that typical pretends not to like her brother, but, you know, something happens to him and then all of a sudden she cares.
You know, that's
just a sibling thing, I guess.
Yeah.
And they send him home. You know what they said? Oh, it's just a virus. It'll pass.
Okay.
Yeah, no 106 fevers, no, none of that. So as long as the symptoms stay mild and everybody follows the protocols and things go the way they're supposed to go, whether it's positive or negative, you know. On to the next thing.
Yeah, I was very relieved to hear when you told me that the symptoms were on the milder side, because that's
definitely
what I understand from what my doctor was saying when I got it, was if it starts out mild, it's probably not going to get severe. If you start out severe, it's the where the problems come in, but if you start off mild, it's probably gonna stay way. So
if it just hits you hard, I guess if it's gonna get you, it's gonna get you right away, right? When it's gonna come up and surprise you. It was a thing where it started to like, it really got to be front of mind when, and I think for my wife too, to buy all the at-home kits was when it started hitting like close, like in the classroom, like the kid next to her goes home. You know, like literally the kid who sits at the desk over from her, he gets sent home. He's on quarantine. A couple of her friends have got it, you know, and so it makes sense that these are kids, and no matter how much you tell kids, you know, stay away or they're kids. Kids are going to be kids. You can't, you know.
That is absolutely understandable, which is why I'm still wondering why a lot of these communities are making their kids go back to school. Like, it's clear that there's a breakout going on. So I just don't understand that.
Yeah.
That was my first reaction when you told me about it, was actually angry. I was mad for you guys and for your children for being in this situation that is this 2 damn years now. We've had this thing going around. You know, if we just do the right thing, we can, you know, pretty much tamp this thing out, but we just don't want to do the right thing. We don't want to be considerate to people who aren't us. And that's a failing on all of our parts. So here we go. Just keeps going, and, you know, seemingly until every friggin' human being gets it, it's what it feels like sometimes. But yeah, that was my first thought, was just mad that this crap is still going on. This is, you know, a year and a half now after I had it. So to think that it's still, you know, obviously a different variant now. But
yeah, it's obvious. It's just, and things are going to continue. I don't think it's ever going to become. It almost sounds like this is one of those things that once it's out in the wild, it's another strain. All you're going to just do is be fighting like the next strain. It's going to be like getting the flu shot, right? You're always like a year behind. It's like anytime they're going to do anything, they're always going to be chasing the new one. And it's like, that's where the frustration's going to come in. Now on the positive side, if there's a positive side to this, you know, the way that these things usually will work out is as they mutate, what happens is they tend to get more transmissible, but less fatal.
Well, certainly hope that's what the case is with this.
But I don't think we're ever going to see a situation, not in any time soon, where it's just suddenly going to just become zero.
No, but it could become close to it if we, you know, all did what we're supposed to do and mask up and stay distant and all that. But that's just not going to happen. And like I said, just some of these communities to insist that the kids have to go to school, even with all this in the air, like, you know, like you just said it, you know, what's going to happen when you get a bunch of kids together, like whatever they got is going to eventually get to all of them because they're kids and they're going to do that. Things are going to mingle and whatnot. And, you know, it's bad enough for us adults to go to work with it going around in our communities, but at least most of us know to keep distant and mask up. Kids, of course, are not going to be doing that because they're kids. So that's where the at-home schooling would come. Now, I'm not a parent, so for me to have these opinions on it, I don't know if I have all the components or all the knowledge to make that decision. But it would seem to me, just from a distance, that the safest thing or the best thing would be to keep the at-home education going instead of putting everybody in this big petri dish like that.
Yeah. And my kids have been back in school now for almost a year in school. They were virtual to start last year, but then they were back, and I want to say in November ish, they went back, and it was a limited schedule. It was like 4 days a week. It was mandatory masks. And then when it, you know, that went through the end of the school year. And then when it opened back up this year, it opened up a lot more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
So you're starting to feel, you know, now it's becoming more of a, you know, more mitigation. But now I will say, I think out of all the schools in this area, I think the school my kids go to is like the second hardest hit out of all of them. Mm. Most of the schools have very few, if any, but for some reason, the school they're at, and then the grades they're in just seem to be the ones where the breakouts have happened. And that's what makes it hard, you know?
Well, it was the same down here in Memphis. Once the summer hit, then everything started opening up and everyone was like, yep, it's over. Let's party. Let's celebrate. And no, not quite. So it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, and we've talked about it enough on this show. There's so much, it's been so politicized. There's so much mixed messaging that's going on out there. What you can do, what you can't do. There's been a lot of hypocrisy involved in it. And I think that just makes, it's made it hard. It's made it hard because it's been, you know, co-opted into something that, you know, it's not so much about public safety anymore. It's about a lot of other things, let's just say, you know, and there's a lot of, there's a lot of animosity around this whole thing now. And it's like people have lost their easy target. So they've created new easy targets. And it's just the world we have now with the social media and everybody's got an opinion. It's really easy to get lost in that because there's so much of it out there right now. And even the people can't even agree on things and just what's driving it. And it's, yeah, there's so many motives and, you know, but we know there's always one thing behind all of it.
Always.
It's all about the money.
Yeah. We were, my wife and I were talking about it the other night, like what would drive politicians or people in power to continue to push things that are clearly incorrect as far as the public knowledge and information out there. And it's because they have the power, they have the money to get whatever medicine they need, to get whatever treatment they need, to get whatever their children need when this thing gets to them. They know that they have the best. They know that they're going to be taken care of. So as with a whole lot of things, it comes down to privilege. If you've got the privilege and you've got the power to take care of whatever needs to be taken care of, then you can say things like horse dewormer is the way to go, or bleach or whatever. You can do stupid crap like that. And you're right. There's no reason for safety to be politicized, but yeah, that's where we are. That's where the country is right now. And everything, you gotta have a take, you gotta have an angle, you gotta have a slant, and it's really sad that it's gotten to be that way.
Yeah, but you're more angry than I am.
I mean, yes, I guess I am. I'm angry for the innocent kids that shouldn't have to go through this. I'm angry for the adults, but I'm angrier for the kids because the adults that aren't doing the right things are the ones that are keeping this thing going and spreading it around. And now more and more kids are getting it. And our hospital, our children's hospital down here, Le Bonheur, is absolutely overflowed. And there's just, you know, dead bodies stacking up, basically. And it shouldn't have to be that way. It really shouldn't. But I definitely want to, you know, say that, you know, I wish your children the best. I'm sad for them, but I'm definitely feeling optimistic because their symptoms are on the milder side, and they're strong. They're going to get through this. It's just going to take some time. You know, a couple of weeks, they'll be good as new. If they're, you know, anything I can lend from my experience is that it can be tough, and I certainly empathize with the lack of wind situation. It really does affect you and hit you hard as far as that goes.
Yeah. Now, you remember, because I had a scare with it last year, if you remember.
Yeah, you had something pretty bad. It turned out to be not bad, but it was something
right.
pretty bad.
I had it where it wasn't COVID, but I remember having to call the hotline. This was June of last year, and I called the hotline because, I mean, I was at that point very similar with my daughter. I mean, I would just go from downstairs and walk up the stairs, and I was so winded that I had to sit down.
Yep.
And all I had done was walk up the stairs. Like, it was like I had to sit down for a few minutes before I would find the rest of my strength to get up and walk the last 15 feet to the bed. I can remember being on the phone with the place calling to see if they wanted me to go in for a test. And the girl on the phone was like, you don't need to wait for a test. You need to go to the ER. Like, you need to go to the doctor, like, right now. And I'm like, no. I ain't going. I'm not dying. This ain't killing me. I'll wait for the test. Because I was of that opinion, like, once you go to the ER, you don't come home. Because now you're just walking into the Petri dish.
A lot of them don't.
You know, so I was just like, I felt safer, you know, being at, it's like, no. I, the last place I want to go is be is rum more sick people.
You're definitely not alone there. I have a coworker that her diabetes numbers shot like through the roof, and she refused to go to the hospital because she said, you know, because of all the COVID sick people there, she'd rather stay at home with that.
Yeah, and I waited it out, and this is back when the test results took, 4 or 5 days, you know, there was so many. You know, so we're hoping, you know, get these back on the kids, and, you know, it's at that point now where, you know, we're prepared for both outcomes.
Yeah.
And my wife even went and took the next step and scheduled herself a test because now that, I guess because, I don't know, with her work, basically, because my daughter failed the at-home test, she's got to have a negative test to be able to go back to work. Mine's not as strict. I guess they don't put as much faith in the you know, the home version of the game as they do in the actual, you know, like in the PCR test. So, I mean, obviously if she goes, she has the at-home test positive and she goes and she gets the regular test and she's negative, they're like, well, then you don't need to go. So, okay. But then I know if my daughter, if her test comes back positive, my next step is to go get a test for myself.
Right.
Or at least take that next step and take the at-home one to see if it's worth doing.
Well, and then one more small piece of advice is it spreads kind of slowly, at least when I had it last summer. Because I thought I'd gotten away with not giving it to my wife because she gets out of the house when I start getting symptoms. When I tell her, honey, I just realized I can't taste anything. You probably should leave. And she leaves and goes to a hotel, and she was good for about 4, 5, 6 days. Then she got symptoms, and then she tested positive. So, you know, just because your kids have got symptoms right now doesn't mean you're going to test positive or have symptoms anytime soon. It might be another half a week or even a whole week. It's weird. It's just the stupidest thing, and it sucks that we're, it's still going around, you know, 2 years later. And like you said, I'm just as afraid as you are of that this is something that's going to be with us because it sure doesn't seem like it's going anywhere anytime soon.
You just don't know if it's going to be, is it going to be with us to the point where, you know, somebody gets it and then they shut entire countries down over it? Or is it just going to be, it's just, you know, it's going to become like the flu, or it's going to become a seasonal thing. Because it's a very seasonal thing now. If you look at the spikes and the peaks and the valleys, it's not just, it's constant all the time. And you're like, it just blew through the South, like down in Europe. Now it's starting to get cold up here. Coming back up here, you know, and same thing with a flu season. Like flu season would be normally kicking off here in the next month.
Right.
So we'll see. I don't know if that's something that's just going to become part of life and we deal with it, or if it's going to be, you know, we're going to turn into Australia or New Zealand, where they shut the whole country down because there was one positive case.
Yeah, there's some other country that I read did something, like another really small island, like, you know, Fiji or something like that, or Tonga. You can do that when you, like you pointed out, when New Zealand did it, they have so many fewer people, of course, so it's much easier to do.
And you're an island.
And you're by yourself. You're on an island. You're
literally an island. A little easier to control it when you're an island versus, you know, a country with, you know, third of a billion people,
right?
Or actual countries like India or China with a billion people.
No kidding.
So
the best of luck is all I can say, and we're praying for your kids and loving on them from a distance, and
Hopefully I'll be sending you the news, but hopefully I'll be sending you the good news, and hopefully that 1 in 6 chance for my daughter to be negative, and that's what it just a false positive, and we can just go back to living here again.
Well, we're all hoping for the best. So, yeah, 8 different picks that we're going against tomorrow in this long week 3, another extended week of football, every team playing. Like we were talking about, the first 5 weeks this year have a full schedule instead of the first 3 like normal. So that's a new thing as well. And teams are starting to get beat up. All these running backs and receivers tomorrow that are game time decisions and guys getting called up in their place, and all these quarterbacks that went down in week 2. I didn't play the MASH theme for that, but that was last year was week 1 where everyone was getting hurt, and this year was week 2 where it seemed like every quarterback was getting banged up. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. But I like these differences that we have, differences of opinions and different viewpoints, and we'll see who saw it best. Like you said, we're probably just going to split them.
Well, we'll go 4-4. We'll figure out a way.
Mm-hmm.
One of us will be a game up on the other going into that Monday night game to be the difference maker.
Probably. All right. So unless you have anything else, I think we're done.
Yeah, no, I'm ready. I'm ready to call it a night. Although after the show, I very rarely ever. I can't just go to bed for some reason.
No, I'm with you. I'll be sitting up and watching TV for an hour or something.
Yeah, I'll putz around for a little bit. I'll go lay in bed, watch some videos, read some news, do something for a little bit, and then eventually the phone will fall on my face and it'll be time for bed.
All right. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been, in much less detail, the podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I'm sure everyone listening extends their thoughts and prayers to the Cute Factors as well. And they're going to be fine. They're strong kids and got strong parents, and everything's going to work out for them. All right. Football tomorrow, and we will be back with the full football party 2 hours next week, where we talk about the week 3 festivities and get ready for week 4 in the NFL. And we will talk to you next weekend.